Okay, we're so glad you've chosen GoldSeek.com Radio as a trusted source for business and investing information. Today's special guest, Dr. Stephen Leeb. My featured guest today says that China holds over $1 trillion in U.S. debt, and this could be a big liability for our nation and a potential threat to the financial system. Dr. Stephen Leeb has over a quarter century of investment experience and is the author of 7 books, including his latest titled Red Alert. Welcome back, Dr. Leeb.
Well, thank you so much, Chris. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
It's great to have you back. And, you know, let's kick off the dialogue today with the $1 trillion of our debt owed to China. You've gone on record noting that this could lead to some economic trouble down the road.
You know, the debt per se, yes. There's no secret that China has, accumulated massive amounts of reserves. It's not just $1 trillion in U.S. debt, but it's also nearly 3 additional $1 trillion in other reserves. I think China right now has about $3.7 trillion in total reserves. Yes, I believe that it's a major issue that China does have so much of our debt, but I don't think that is the major issue. That's part and parcel of a mosaic of issues surrounding China. I think the largest of those is that China appears to be, at this moment, certainly growing faster than we are, and I think more governable than we are. You know, what I'm more alarmed at recently is watching the behavior of our dollar, not just against the yuan, which has been soaring, but against the euro. The euro is a currency that collection of countries all use, and among those countries are such disparate names, at least in terms of their politics, as Greece, where you have a right-wing revolt, extremely right-wingers protesting, and France, where you have extreme left-wingers. And the economic bloc itself, the euro, the European countries, are basically not showing much growth outside of Germany. And in fact, outside of Germany, it's doubtful that they're showing any growth at all. This is a mess by any standards, by political standards, by economic standards, by standards of living, by governing standards. It's a mess. Yet, it's a currency that is outperforming our dollar. And that, to me, is really, really worrisome because it suggests that people are losing faith in the world's reserve currency, which is the dollar.
It is troubling for the greenback. I mean, we've seen the U.S. dollar struggling lately. You know, it made several attempts over the last 3 years to break out. It had every opportunity to recover. From a technical perspective, I know our technically inclined listeners and savvy folks are probably wondering as well, you know, why didn't the dollar rally? As all these deflationists who are expecting this incredible greenback rally, and we've seen a breakdown from an ominous diamond pattern, which Edwards and McGee lists as one of the most troublingly bearish patterns.
That's very interesting. I think that it is very troubling. And, you know, against the kind of political background in Europe, to see the dollar falter is just, you know, it's extremely troubling. What it's saying to us and what the world is saying to us in the way the world talks, that is with money and where they're placing their bets, is that they're not comfortable anymore or really comfortable anymore with the U.S. as a reserve currency. And they're becoming less and less comfortable with that. And the problem right now is that there's really no alternative. I mean, it's too, you know, it's a 300-pound man, or as Neil Cavuto put it, a 400-pound man versus a 500-pound man. Who should run the race? Well, neither one of them are going to run it very fast, but I guess you'd have to bet on the 400-pound guy knowing nothing else. And, you know, we're sort of the 400-pound man, and fortunately our major competitor is a 500-pound man. That's no way. That's not a good way to run the world. That's not a healthy situation for, you know, the world, for everybody. Therein comes gold. Gold is a very viable currency. It has been. Its metal has been tested, no pun intended, over the past, I don't know, millennia. You know, this is a cliche. Gold's been around for, you know, as long as we've been trading in things, gold or silver or nickel, some metal has played a major role. The dollar is very, very new to the game. I think, and this is what is happening, I think, is that it's in no one's interest right now, right at this moment. It's in really no one's interest, by no one, I mean East and West, to see gold really take off. Certainly the West is scared to death of gold, because if they see gold take off, if investors see gold take off, it's going to create an avalanche of support for gold, because it will be recognized then, hey, this is a currency. This is a currency I want to have. And once that happens, and once gold, you know, starts gaining traction as a potential currency, then you're going to see the dollar really going to be in for troubled times. You know, it won't be long before you see critical commodities priced in terms of gold or some basket of currencies in which gold plays a prominent role. And this is where China comes into the picture. I'm not telling anybody, saying anything anybody doesn't know, because it's been reported in the news. China continues to purchase through Hong Kong about 100 tons of gold a month. They also produce, 40 tons a month or something like that. I'm not sure. So they're basically accumulating, 1,600-1,700 tons a year. That's what we know about. But there are other ways and other places that China gets gold, too. I mean, now they have, you know, active ETFs in China, et cetera. China is waiting, in my opinion, to A, their markets get a little freer, and B, that they have enough gold on hand where they can say, hey, we're now the big boys in town. If maybe not worldwide, but certainly when it comes to Asia, when it comes to the Middle East, it's our currency, it's our basket that is going to be the denominator for oil, for other kinds of commodities. And when that happens, it's lights out. I mean, figuratively and literally. For the U.S. And, you know, I will say, you know, as a citizen of this country, as someone who has a couple of kids, this makes me really upset. This makes me angry, and it makes me extremely sad. I thought that this last episode in Washington was the worst I've ever seen in my lifetime. But to see 18 senators vote against opening the government, and much more important, voting against against a debt ceiling that could have, if we did not raise it, led to total economic chaos. It certainly could have been the death, immediate death, of the dollar as a reserve currency. It didn't necessarily have to unfold like that, but it could have. And to see the majority of Republicans in the House of Representatives vote against raising the debt ceiling, and then see that the alternative wasn't, well, okay, we'll pass a debt ceiling and extend it for the next 2 years. No, we're extending it for the next few months, and then we're going to do it again, folks. Then we're going to do it again. And who knows what happens next time this thing occurs. Now, just step back in history just a little bit to the mid-90s. You have a very liberal Bill Clinton as president. Bill Clinton gets his head handed to him in midterm elections in the 90s. Newt Gingrich et al. Seize control of Congress. Sweeping, massive victory. The government eventually shuts down. They can't come to any agreement. They hassle and bargain and fight and everything else. And then they finally come to an agreement. And that agreement, which didn't involve dire circumstances, this one, that agreement was ratified by the Senate 100-0. After which, Gingrich and Clinton got busy and passed a lot of legislation. Both of them decided after that that they better call themselves Americans, not necessarily Republicans. I mean, obviously, they stayed Republicans and Democrats, but above that, rising above that, was the sobriquet American. That's what they were at that point. I don't see any trace of that now. I see rancor and anger on a level that I have never seen in my life in this country right now. It's very, very upsetting. It really is discouraging. I mean, let me just tell you an anecdote, because it really kind of got my attention. And I don't like to deal in anecdotes. I like dealing with a lot of evidence. But I have an eye doctor. I'm not going to mention the name of the person. But this person is a very excellent eye doctor. Someone, I would guess early 60s. Very, very solid. I mean, children went to Ivy League schools, et cetera. And I would say left-leaning, if anything. She likes John Kerry, as an example. The other day, I went to her for an appointment. And she said, you know, before you sit in that chair, you know, the chair where they measure your vision, just sit across from me for a second. I know you're in this business. I want to see what you think. And she said, I'm really worried. I've never seen a situation like this. And this is from somebody who has, you know, seen a lot. She said, what do you think? And I said, you know, Dr. So-and-so, I tend to be bearish on America now. I hate to tell you this, but I'm really worried. I'm upset. I'm upset for my children. She has children that are about my age, too. And she said, I agree with you. And then she went on and she said that this fighting, this rancor is something we've never seen. We have no statesmen in this country. The day before that vote was cast in Congress, you had your president out there telling everybody how horrible the Republicans were. Well, he may or may not believe that. He may believe it. But, you know, that's a time when you know you've won. You say, it's great, we're all coming together as Americans. You don't say, it's great, I've beaten these horrible Republicans. That's not the thing to say. I mean, the divisiveness, and I'm not blaming Obama even. I'm just blaming the anger that is out there, the lack of basic civility. I mean, when civility goes, so does civilization. Someone once told me that. And you're starting to see that. And it's just really, really upsetting. And I think people should take this more seriously. I mean, if it doesn't involve writing your congressperson, that should be, first step. But you should also, I think owning gold is a necessity. I don't know when it's going to go up. Again, I don't think it's in the interest of either, certainly not in the interest of the West for it to go up. And the East may not have accumulated enough yet to really let it fly, but it's going to happen. And I think it's a must own for everybody out there. I really do. I don't know how much you should own, but you have to own it when you just look at what's going on out there.
As Gerald Celente says, I think so euphemistically, when people have nothing to lose, they lose it. You know, you also note recently that the stock market rally may be little more than an illusion resulting from massive Fed stimulus, and navigated over to the St. Louis Fed website, and it showed a shocking number approaching $4 trillion on their balance sheet. You know, the last time I checked that was only, seemed like a few months ago, and it was at $3.3 trillion, increasing at an almost parabolic rate. And at some point, there's going to be a bill that's got to be paid here.
No, there absolutely will. You know, there'll come a point where people will just say, you know, I don't want the dollar. I mean, I can't trust these people to, you know, pay their debts. Who's going to, you know, own dollars? Are you, if you're a foreigner, are you going to buy a dollar if you know you're not going to get paid off for buying it? You know, seriously, I mean, it's that simple. These are not difficult equations. These are not difficult concepts.
Peter Grandich and I were discussing this yesterday. When will China dump these treasury bonds? Japan owns just slightly less. You're talking in the neighborhood of $2.5 trillion at least, and that's on the low end. Why would they be worried about their treasuries when they're importing so much physical yellow metal through Hong Kong into mainland China? And they're holding on 100% of what they're producing.
They're also importing from other places, too. I mean, the Hong Kong numbers are there because they're official, and Hong Kong is, you know, more or less a city-state, though it's controlled by China. It's still a city-state, and they have their own reporting, et cetera. But, you know, China has ports that people just don't follow, and there's gold that comes in there, too. So we really don't know how much gold China is importing, but it's a big number. It's a very, very big number. And they're not doing it so that everybody in China can, have gold rings and gold jewelry. They're doing it because they realize that at a certain point, the dollar is just not going to be a meaningful reserve currency, that gold is going to have a major role to play, and that they want their currency to have a major role to play. And, you know, right now, China's trade with the rest of the world is roughly on a par with the U.S., which is it's amazing. That's a remarkable kind of accomplishment. But it's going to continue to rise, but it's not going to, you know, dramatically surpass the U.S., I don't know, for a while. But in order for China to speed up this transition to one in which the dollar is no longer the reserve currency, may still have a role to play, they are going to have to do it by virtue of their being able to say, hey, we've got a tremendous amount of gold that we're going to back our currency up with. And then the dynamics of the game really do change. So this may take place in parts, in stages, but it's going to take place. And I can't guarantee anything in this world, but my strong feeling is that the recent shenanigans in Washington have speeded up dramatically the Chinese timetable.
It would only make sense for that to be the case. We're looking at a January and February cutoff where we could be very easily back into that rancor, that political wrangling on Capitol Hill. Once again, we'll be facing a potential government shutdown because they didn't actually put a dollar figure. There is currently no debt ceiling. I haven't seen a lot of media sources address this. They just put a timeline on it this time. And, you know, the Heritage Foundation picked up on that. And I mentioned this yesterday on the show, so forgive me, listeners, but this was a way to circumvent a debt ceiling, and it could be setting a dangerous precedent.
But yes, what's happened is dangerous. I mean, when you see that big a chunk of the Congress voting in favor of an action that is That is very perilous, catastrophic, extremely perilous. I've never seen that. Never in my life have I seen that. I just think that the reactions in the market are, you know, basically telling you the same thing. No one's seen it. And yes, the stock market's on a tear because you've got tremendous liquidity in the system, tremendous liquidity in the system. But that's not changing the fact that median incomes in this country, real purchasing power for the median income person in this country has declined this century. It's down probably 5 to 8 or 10% since the beginning of the century. Chris, I don't think that there's ever been a time where we've had such a protracted decline in real purchasing power than we've had since the beginning of this century. And I'm including the Depression. I don't believe that it lasted that long during the Depression. It was steeper, but it was not nearly as protracted. This is something that we probably haven't seen since Thomas Jefferson started Declaration of Independence. It's very worrisome. And, what makes it really worrisome is the fact that there just doesn't appear to be any pro-growth talk out there. I mean, I did hear Trent Lott the other night on the radio, and he's never been somebody I would have voted for, be very honest with you. But, I mean, he made tremendous sense to me. He said that, you know, America has to come together and start, you know, advocating pro-growth. There's no sign that that is happening anywhere. It's just the opposite. It's, you know, the word of the day is, you know, get your opponent. Beat him. Beat him into the ground. Beat him into the dirt. And that's no way. We're all on the same team. It's not like one, we're in, you know, there's a, you know, a yellow team and a white team or a blue team and a green team. I mean, it's not like the Yankees versus the Dodgers or the Cardinals versus the Red Sox, as the case may be. This is not a sporting event, guys. We're all Americans. We're playing for America. You know, yes, you can have different views and different ways of approaching it, but just like if Gingrich and Clinton can come together and pass a whole bunch of legislation, I mean, it can be done. But why aren't we doing it?
But remember, originally, it wasn't that way. Originally, it was, we shall hang together or we will surely hang separately. United we stand, divided we fall.
Yeah, well, that's it, yes. Those cliches nail it. They're exactly right.
Exactly. And I wanted to shift gears, though, a moment, if we could, over to the precious metals. You know, I came across an interesting media source this week that showed that roughly 10 billion ounces of silver were available above ground in 1950. Fast forward to today, less than 1 billion ounces of silver, but over 6 billion ounces of gold. So if you look at it not from a production standpoint, but just available ounces, it would seem to imply that 10 or 15 to 1 gold to silver ratio might reestablish itself at some point.
You know, it could, yes. It's certainly possible. But what the ironic thing that silver has going against it, and it's not a reason not to own silver. I would certainly own silver. I think it's, definitely going to do extremely well. But, you know, it's an industrial metal, and it's a critical industrial metal. It's needed for photovoltaics, which has started to really take off. Just started, and I emphasize started, because it got tremendous room for growth, and silver is vital in there. Because silver is so vital in so many different areas, I mean, it's the best thermal conductor, the best electrical conductor, etc., it probably will not ever be, you know, a major monetary metal. It will be a monetary metal. It'll be, you know, they'll take it, you know, in return for goods, but it will be gold that will be the monetary metal. And if you're if you're protecting yourself against the demise of the dollar, I think gold would be my first choice at this point. Happy to have silver, too, but I think gold is really the place to be.
You know, another interesting anecdote, Mr. Greenspan, the former head of the Federal Reserve, published a new book that he's quite concerned about the possibility of double-digit inflation. The former Federal Reserve chairman, who had somewhat similar outlook on the markets and the economy, I think you might agree with the current chairman, Bernanke, is concerned about inflation. I mean, I wonder, could this lead to tapering, or have they painted themselves into a corner?
I don't think it'll lead to tapering. I think that right now they've painted themselves into a big corner. And I think that, you know, what you're seeing is that all the money in the world really can't get the economy up to speed. It just becomes just lost. It, you know, gets stuck in the stock market, and it doesn't find its way into the real economy. And that eventually it will. And eventually, when it does, Greenspan could be right. And maybe I think we will be in for a bout of tremendously high inflation. But, you know, the catalyst, it could be, you know, strength in the real economy that really, you know, makes commodities move dramatically higher. Or it could be the fact that no one wants the dollar anymore. And things start being priced in metals and other currencies. And that would lead to wild inflation in this country.
Well, the only question remaining is, when can we expect that interesting precious metals book we've been anticipating?
Got it, but I you know, I don't feel any pressure, because I, you know, even with gold at 2,000, I think the bull market will have just begun. You know, I've got the outline more or less done, sort of just waiting for when I think people are getting a little bit more interested in gold, and, you know, then I'll find a publisher and you'll see it.
Very, very good. Well, we're going to look forward to that and having you back on the show.
My pleasure, Chris. It was a pleasure being with you today. Thank you very, very much.